Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Felpham, and I have a very special guest. Diane Fraser is here. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Diane is here because she has a new album, and it is your first album, correct?
Yes, it is.
And it is called You and I, The Words and Music of Leslie Brickus. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Having a first album is always a big deal because it's a lot of work. And this is a collection, obviously, of Leslie Brickus songs. And before we get started with the album, let's talk a little bit about you so listeners can find out who you are. So give us some background about where you grew up and kind of how what your education was and kind of the road that got you to here where you're now singing and doing an album.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I grew up in North Hollywood, California.
Oh.
And I wanted to be a Broadway star from the time I was about 4 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I loved to sing and I loved music. And I, you know, did a lot of shows in high school and that kind of thing. And then I went to UCLA and started as a music major. Mm-hmm. Then I spent a year in France in Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. On the education abroad program. And I had taken French in high school, but I really like love France and the French language. And it came easy to me, which music did not, because mm-hmm. music theory was very difficult. people always say it's like math, and math was never my strongest subject.
Right.
So when I came back, I changed my major to French. I never did anything officially with it. After that point, I moved to New York, and I mostly was a waitress, but I did some summer stock and some off-Broadway and things like that. And then I produced theater that I just lost money on. I produced a regional production of a Stephen Schwartz musical, The Baker's Wife, with two mm-hmm. college friends of mine. And it remains my favorite show, and he's my favorite composer. But that didn't go so great. And I was a singing waitress in LA, came back, was living with my parents again. Well, and I needed a real job.
Right. But did you grow up in a musical family? I'm just curious.
Not really. My dad was a boxing promoter. Don
oh, really?
Fraser. He was a famous boxing promoter. Yeah.
Oh, what was his name?
Don Fraser.
That sounds familiar. Because I grew up in LA.
Oh, yeah.
I was born and raised here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and my mom, actually, she's from this area where I am now. She's from Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania, outside of Philly.
I know where that is. Yeah.
She did sing on the radio, actually, when she was 10 years old. But then the entire family moved west because my uncle was an actor, a child actor. And so mm-hmm. they moved to LA, but she didn't really pursue it. My sister's a drummer and she plays on the album and she's in the live shows. She plays with me. But anyway, so I needed a job, and I was dating a French guy, as a matter of fact, who mm-hmm. had a friend who was leaving a job at a production company. And so that's how I got into the entertainment business. I was an assistant at an entertainment company where I met my husband, who was a writer. And he was the one that, you know, said to me, you should be an agent, because I would do what my dad did, which would be at parties. My dad was always putting together, hey, here's Donald. He loves musical theater. So does Jill. Why don't you guys, you know, talk? And mm-hmm. that's the way he would do it. And so I was always doing that. And my then boyfriend, now husband, said, well, you'd be a good agent. So I actually went to work for a very good friend of mine. We're still very, very close. And she was a talent agent at a small agency. And she said, well, I need an assistant. Come and be my assistant. So I trained there and became an agent, and then went through various incarnations. That agency merged. I became a partner in a small lit agency. From there, I went to ICM, and I was a packaging agent and a lit agent for many years at ICM. Mm-hmm. Then I became a manager. So I've been at Industry Entertainment as a manager and a producer, you know, for a number of years now, but still always representing film and television writers, which I will do forever, because I do need to finance my cabaret
right.
career,
right.
which I only spend money on. But I always say it's psychic income, you
right.
know, from
right.
doing this, because I feel like it's so healthy. You know, I always tell people I don't do extreme sports. My version of that is singing in public.
Mm-hmm.
But I will always want to do that. So anyway, so I then my kids were young when I was at ICM. And then once I was at industry, the lifestyle's a lot more your own, you know, your work hours, et cetera. And so what I started doing, I did the writer strike of 07-08. I did a cabaret show. I put it together and I did a cabaret show called Part-Time Diva that I performed, you know, six or eight times, San Francisco, LA, Palm Springs. And then I started doing benefits through a friend of mine who was a big supporter of the Actors Fund. We started doing Actors Fund benefits at my house, and then we moved them to other venues. And then and I did a big fundraiser concert at my house for my daughter's school. That led to, you know, doing other fundraisers other places. And then in like 2014, I started doing a lineup show called An Evening of Classic Broadway.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I remember that at Rockwell.
Rockwell with Brad Ellis.
Yeah.
And around that time, I started working on, I started working with Todd Schroeder on what was going to be a Leslie Bricus show as a follow-up to Part-Time Diva. And we worked over a period of time. And at one point, Todd said, well, we have 25 songs, more than twice that we, as many as we need. And you have to write this and tell me why you're singing these songs. And I just never wrote it. And then we started doing the Rockwell shows and that kind of blossomed, and I was working full time. And so I never got back to it. And then once the pandemic hit, I thought this might be a good album. And I called Todd and I said, what would you think? And he said, oh my God, that's a great idea. So we worked on Zoom for, you know, a year and a half or so, you know, paring down the songs. In on the album, there are four mashups, and the songs do go together well, every single one of them, but they came about largely because I just couldn't decide on the songs. I didn't want to do more than 10 on the album, and there were too many to choose from. And so it was like, okay, let's shoot this together. So anyway, so that's how that came about. And then, you know, we recorded, we got into the studio with the bass player, Adam Cohen, my sister on drums. And then I sort of thought, at some point I'll do what I need to do to release it, you know, but I was like, not in any hurry, thinking this is just a vanity project and whatever. And then this year, the writer's strike hit May 2nd. And I thought, this is not my first rodeo. This is my third writer's strike that I have been through. And I thought it could go on for months, which the others had. And I said, I'm just getting the album done. So I, you know, Todd mastered all the songs. I, you know, got set up at CD Baby for the manufacturing pressing of the albums, the digital release. I got some publicists. I decided I'm got to do live, you know, album release shows. Anyway, so then we just decided we'll do it. And the writers settled, let's see, it was Yom Kippur, end of September, I guess. But by that time, the dates were set for the live shows. The release of December 1st was set for the album. Oh, and I got signed to a label, Blue Jazz record label, that I got connected with a cabaret singer friend in New York, connected me there. And then everything was just ready to go. So we said, okay.
but it's a big shift, because you've been working, you haven't been working as a singer. You haven't been, I mean, before you started recording this, when was the last time you actually had been singing? Because you,
well, I always sang in the Rockwell shows.
Right.
I always sang, you know, we would have usually a cast of 8 or 9 singers who would all do 2 songs, and so would Brad and I. And we would often do an opening duet and then another song, or I'd do a duet with someone else, or 2 solos. But I sang every one of those. And then also we got connected to a nonprofit called Music for Autism. And I've done a show for them every year since probably 2014. And that would usually be with 2 or 3 or 4 people. And then just singing in other people's shows. I hadn't done a live show, though, since my cabaret show, Part-Time Diva.
Right.
So it had been since like 2011 or something, right, since I had done a whole solo show of just me.
But you were always keeping, at least keeping a toe, yeah. in there, and, was, and always keeping part of it.
Continuing to take voice lessons, mm-hmm. and just with Christina Safran as my teacher. She's in New York.
We know Christina Safran. Yeah.
We FaceTime for lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I kept that up and just sort of kept working on material and, you know, I never stopped it.
Right. Well, and it's such a great story because, and you're not, and I love this kind of story because there's, one of the other people, I don't know if you know Celia Burke, but
I'm not personally, but I know who she is.
Right. Yeah. Celia has been on the show several times, and is a good friend of mine now. And she's has a similar story. I mean, she studied theater and she went to New York and auditioned and didn't really decided she really didn't want to pursue it at that moment. And she got out of the entertainment business and went to like worked her way up the corporate ladder. But she did the same thing you did, is that once she got where she wanted to be, she was like, I'm going to go back and I want to pursue this. I, you know, I'm comfortable now. I've got a career, but I'm going to pursue singing and albums and cabaret performing.
Yeah.
And I love that because it's sort of like, I'm not going to give up on my dream. I'm, you know, I still am going to keep, it's going to be there in the back of my brain. It's still hanging out there in the back of my brain somewhere. And I'm not going to let it die. I'm going to let that little flame is flickering back there, but I'm going to bring it to the forefront and I'm going to go after it. At some point, I'm going to go after it. And that's what you're doing, which is great.
For all these years, I faced the world alone. And now the time has come to prove to them I've made it on my own. This is the moment when all I've done, all of the dreaming, scheming, and screaming become one. This is the day. See it sparkle and shine when all I've lived for becomes mine. Just once in a lifetime, there's one special moment, one wonderful moment, when fate takes your hand. And this is my moment, my once in a lifetime, when I can explore a new and exciting land. For once in my lifetime, I feel like a giant. Soar like an eagle, as though I had wings. For this is my moment, my destiny calls me. And though it may be just once in my lifetime, I'm gonna do great things. This is
Let's talk about when you decided to do this album, And because I was going to ask you, I wasn't sure, because sometimes when these albums come about, it's because you've done the show first and then you're doing an album to commemorate the show. But in this case, mm-hmm. the album came first.
Right.
So how, when you sat down, because the collection of Leslie Bricka songs, the catalog is huge, because, I mean, he wrote for the screen, he wrote for the stage. He hugely successful, worked with a lot of different collaborators. And a lot of people, I don't think, realize that they know a Leslie Bricka song. And they know some stuff right off the top of their head, but there's a lot of things that if you sang them a Leslie Bricka song, they would say, oh, because he's one of those ones that I don't think people, a lot of people don't know the name, but they know the songs and they don't.
Well, that's what that. It's kind of a, it's a leitmotif in the live show, because it is baffling to me that people don't know who he is. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy at the record label, Blue Jazz Records, said, this is genius. No one has done a Leslie Bricka album. And actually, when he died, which was a little over 2 years ago, I thought, oh, now every cabaret singer in the world is going to do Leslie Bricka. But I am not aware of anyone that's done an album or a show. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Sondheim died a month later, and everyone, Sondheim, everywhere
right.
you go, you know.
Right, right.
But what's funny, it is amazing, because I do talk about that in the show. And as recently as like a week ago, I was in a dance class where the teacher's like very supportive and was saying, oh, Diane, and she's winning an album. And one of the students came up to me and said, oh, what's your album? And I said, and this was a woman, you know, who should know who Leslie Bricka is. Mm-hmm. I said, music of Leslie Bricka, and she's blank. I said, Feeling Good, What Kind of Fool Am I, Once in a Lifetime, Pure Magic. Oh yeah, I know those songs. And then she said, what's the name of your album? How does she spell her name?
Right.
So people think Leslie Bricka is a woman, which is mm-hmm. another kind of, you know, leitmotif in the show. But it is amazing how many people, the hits go on and on and on. And if you name the songs, everyone's like, oh, of course. And I don't know if it's because he was so humble. I mean, I never met the man, but just mm-hmm. watching interviews, and he just seemed like such a warm-hearted, generous,
right.
you know.
I think,
and people who knew him have said that.
Right. I think the problem throughout his career always was that a lot of the times he was working with collaborators
yeah,
who were very famous. Thing. They, right. you know, he was working with Anthony
Mancini.
Or yes. Anthony Newley, who was very out there in the public, and people knew it was an Anthony Newley show. They just didn't realize right. that Leslie Bricka was the collaborator, or Henry Mancini, or with the more recent Broadway stuff, it was Frank Wildhorn.
Right.
And it was a Frank Wildhorn show, and Frank Wildhorn's name.
No,
was
I think you're know? Right. I think that's absolutely.
And Bricka was never a showy publicity-seeking person,
right?
You know, and mm-hmm. so that's why his name was always forgotten when it came to the collaborations he did. But he was so important to these projects. You know, mm-hmm. the songs would not be there without him,
right?
You know? And there's some classic songs. So when you sat there with this catalog, what was your first thought? I mean, did you have? Well, I mean, you must have had. What? Okay, first off, what drew you to him in the first place? There had to be something. Well,
when I was a little girl, I mm-hmm. loved Petula Clark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that she was starring in a movie, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, mm-hmm. I had to see it. And I fell in love with the movie and moreover, the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the start of it. I also, on Turner Movie Classics, at one point watched the old movie with Tony Tanner and Millicent Martin of Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, which is one of the, you know, I would say more different, unique type of shows. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. Something drew me in. And that was another slew of songs that I loved. And it was kind of that, you know, just sort of following, you know, looking at whatever he had written, and many times, you know, like just the Sinatra hit, My Kind of Girl. He wrote that song. People don't know that, you know, mm-hmm. and Goldfinger and all these different songs. And I just, you know, had a real appreciation mm-hmm. for a lot of his music. And I thought, you know, I wanted to do a composer centric show. And so that's what started it. And I think the first mashup we worked on was the At the Crossroads After right. Today,
right.
which are two songs from Dr. Doolittle, which he wrote music and lyrics for, and won an Oscar for Talk to the Animals. Mm-hmm. And they really work together well. It's the opening number, and it's a great opener.
Here I stand at the crossroads of life. Childhood behind me, the future to come. And alone. Nothing planned at the crossroads of life, but life will find me more grateful than some. It has known. Grateful to see I see, grateful to be what life expects me to be. After today, nothing will be the same again. After today, I'll make my claim to fame, and then the grass will be greener, and the air will be cleaner, and my life be serener than heaven knows when. Heaven knows when. After today, I shall have bid my fears goodbye. After today, I shall have no more tears to cry. I'll learn to live with laughter to stay. Today, nothing will be the way it was. After today, I'll say, oh, what a day it was. I learned to live with laughter to stay. After the tears comes the laughter. After today, grateful to see.
And then from there, it was just a lot of the other songs. Like, I always loved all the songs from Victor Victoria. Mm-hmm. And that was with Henry Mancini, of course. And just, you know, If I Ruled the World, which people don't know.
Right.
Oh, Tony Bennett. You know, they associate it with. In fact, that was what was very interesting for me when I did the show at Catalina. There were so many people that came up to me that were like, I had no idea he wrote like that is my favorite Tony Bennett song. And people talked about, there were a couple of people who I didn't know who were like, I am the biggest Brickus and Newley fan you'll ever see. And that was spectacular. Mm-hmm. And the way you put these two songs together and just talking about what they learned about him. And I realized that it really is a tribute to Leslie Brickus. As
yeah.
much as it started out as though it's a vanity project for me.
Well, but but the important thing is, and I did not see the show at the Catalina. And we're talking about the Catalina Bar and Grill for people who don't.
Right,
people,
right.
Listeners around the world who are listening. Catalina Bar and Grill is sort of the premier jazz cabaret spot here in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's kind of taken the place of, because a lot of the former clubs have disappeared over time, and the Catalina is still there.
Yeah.
And it's a great spot. It's where all the name people play. I mean, there's a couple of other really great places, but that's sort of like the main one that the big names play these days. And that's where you had, I think it was on the 15th of November. Is that right?
Right.
You had your launch concert there. But getting a show together is so difficult, because one of the things, and I think Todd Schroeder was correct when he told you this, which is, and I tell you know, people who have not done a cabaret show before, I say to them, it's yes, I want to come see you sing, and you're a wonderful singer, but a cabaret show doesn't work unless you tell me, I need to know why you're singing these songs.
Right.
I want to hear your voice, and I could always just buy your album if I want to hear you sing these songs, but I'm there to see you. And I need to not only know about the person you're singing songs by, but I also need to know, I need to get something about you out of the show.
Right.
So I need to know your connection to Leslie Bricus. I need to know, you know, why you're singing Leslie Bricus songs. So talk about how you wrote the show.
What's interesting is, I think one of the things, when I told you that after working with Todd and we had all these arrangements several years ago, and then he said, now you have to write, you know, tell me why you're singing them. And my first show, Part-Time Diva, had a lot of comedy. My husband wrote parody lyrics to songs, and he punched up my very dry, you know, patter. And it was funny. And I thought, oh, I want it to be funny. And I didn't think it would be that funny. None of the songs are really traditionally comedic. And I think that kind of, you know, scared me a little bit. But as we were writing the song, and again, you know, I kind of did the first draft. My director, Laura Henry, who has been, oh my God, just huge contribution to this. She helped with the writing of it, as did my husband, and Todd contributed as well. And so it really did become more personal, like exactly what you're saying, why this song means something to me, why I'm singing it. And there ended up being a lot of comedy, you know, like, for example, Le Jazz Hot.
Don't give anything away. I was going to mention it, but I don't want to give anything away, because as I listen to the album my listeners know that I harp on this all the time, which is, when you sit down to listen to any album, whether it's a cast recording or a vocalist recording, you are required, if you are a listener of the show, you are required to take the entire amount of time it takes to listen to the album from beginning to end, to listen to the whole album in one sitting, because that is the point. The artist who puts this together is taking you on a musical journey. The songs are in a specific order for a reason, and you are supposed to listen to it from beginning to end. So you go on the journey with the artist and you listen to it. That's it. You don't pick and choose you don't pick one song to listen to and then you come back and pick another song. Listen to it from beginning to end. And Le Jazz Hot surprised me, because it started and I don't want to give away the surprise, because there was a surprise, because it started and I went, oh, she's singing Le Jazz Hot from Victor Victoria. And then something happens and I went, oh, okay. I was surprised. I was like, oh my God. Okay. But don't give it away. Because I want people to be surprised by that track. Because it really did surprise me. Congratulations, because it did surprise me.
Good, I've
heard a lot of stuff, but that really surprised me. So continue your story, but without the spoiler.
So it just kind of evolved with infusing more personal information, if you will, into the patter. And I wanted to talk about Leslie Bricus, you know, the many collaborators he had and just sort of the career trajectory. I mean, one of the things that always has bothered me was on competition shows like American Idol, where someone will say, like, Feeling Good, probably arguably the most famous Bricus and Newley song that no one knows they wrote.
A lot of people don't even know it's from a show. They just
No one knows that. And
yeah.
On American Idol, they say, I'm singing Feeling Good by Michael Bublé or by Nina Simone.
Nina Simone, right.
And no one knows. And in fact, it was funny. I was at a club in my neighborhood, Vitello's, which now doesn't do ticketed shows, but they have a trio there on the weekends. And I know the singer, the girl singer. who sang Feeling Good. And she is a musical theater aficionado, grew up in a musical theater household. And I said, do you know where that song came from? She said, no idea. Do you know who wrote it? No idea. And I told her, and she was floored that it's from a 1965 Broadway musical. And by the way, if you listen to it on the cast recording, who thought that song could become what it did become when you hear the original version?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's a good song. That's, I mean, that's,
it's a great
song. That's the, that's the earmark. That's what makes a good song is the fact that it is a song that fits in the show, but it can be pulled out and become a standard. And that has become a standard now.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of his songs have.
Because they're good songs.
Yeah.
A good song is a good song.
Yeah, exactly.
In the show or out of the show. It's a good song. And that's why it works. So once you whittled the list down, as you said, you've got some mashups in here, which are really good. And I got to be honest with you. I did. I am very proud of the fact that when Leslie Bricus passed, I did a whole episode on Leslie Bricus.
Oh, did you?
I did. I did a whole tribute show that covered all of the musicals he wrote, songs. And I included, even for fun, I included some of the movie stuff he wrote, included. I tried, because the show is very focused on musical theater, I covered all the theater stuff he did. But I also did, for fun, covered some of the film stuff. But I did do a whole show on his. But there's a lot of stuff on here that I don't even remember some of these songs. I really don't. Because you cover you cover a lot of interesting stuff. There are some familiar things on here. I mean, you've got Pure Imagination from Blanca, and you've got stuff from Victor Victoria, things that are going to be familiar. But you also are covering a lot of songs that I don't know that people are going to be that familiar with. Which is good because it's giving people a real great broad sample of Bricus's work, which is really important. So once you got this all down, talk a little bit about the sequencing, because I'm always harping on the sequencing.
You mean the order playlist of the songs?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you, you said, I mean, as you said, At the Crossroads and After Today is a great opener.
Well, that felt like an opener.
Yeah.
You and I is what started it all. And You and I is a song I actually did sing as sort of a tribute to my husband in Part-Time Diva, my first cabaret show. And I have always loved that song so much. And so I knew that I needed that nearer to the end. And I think that Pure Imagination is also one that can be a good opener. So I thought putting that second would be good. And then the reason we put Feeling Good in the next spot, I think, is just because it's so familiar.
Right.
And if people, I mean, most people have heard Pure Imagination. Many don't know At the Crossroads and After Today.
Right.
But Feeling Good, they're bound to know. And then I think with the next two, I'm not really sure why we did The Crazy World, If I Ruled the World next. I don't remember if there was a specific reason why that came next, but then Jazz Hot was sort of to, you know, liven it up a little bit, because it's a little ballad heavy, even though there are some driving numbers, but, you know, wanted to mix that up.
Yeah, you gotta mix it up.
Happiness is just a song that I have always loved. And no one seems to know it.
I knew it. Yeah. I knew it. It's from Scrooge.
Right.
Which people, again, don't remember that he did the movie Scrooge, which has then been turned into a stage show, which is performed all the time.
Right.
And most people know the songs from Scrooge, but they don't remember this song, because I think is it a Tiny Tim song? I'm trying to remember.
It's a trio.
It's a trio. Right.
Yeah. It's Scrooge. And then the, you know, love interest.
Who's
sing it as a trio.
It's a beautiful song. It's a beautiful song.
And it's kind of plaintive, you know, in a minor key, and just kind of, there's sort of a poignancy to that song. And it's funny, because it's really a love song, but it always makes me think of my children, you know, and just sort of like, I don't know, it's funny, because that's one of probably half of the songs on the album that from time to time I'll sing them and cry, and that's one of them. You know, that it just gets to me every time.
They say happiness is a thing you can't see, a thing you can't touch. I disagree. Happiness is standing beside me. I can see him, he can see me. Happiness is whatever you want it to be. Happiness is a high hill. Will I find it? Yes, I will. Folly of fools, pity poor me, one of the fools. Happiness is smiling upon me, walking my way, sharing my day. Happiness is whatever you want it to.
When it came on, it caught my ear because I went, I know this song, and it took me a minute to place which movie
it
was from.
So you didn't look at the songs, the descriptions, or what they were before you listened?
I don't usually do that now. Oh. I like to listen to it blind because I don't really want to know what's coming up next. I want to take it in as I'm listening to it, and then I'll go back and look at the list again after I'm done listening to the whole album. And you close with Two for the Road, which is
right.
Which is so interesting because over the years, that song, which was written for a film, which was written for a movie, which was Albert Finney and Audrey Hepburn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And was not a hugely successful film. It was very well received, but I don't think it was like a huge hit. But that song, for some reason, has become kind of a semi-standard. Because
yeah,
people
definitely.
Have recorded that song over and over again. But it's sort of like built momentum over the years. Because I remember for the longest time, I never heard of that song. And then suddenly I started hearing people recording it because people have really latched onto that song. It's just a fantastic song.
No, it's a great song.
It's a great song. And it's a great song to end an album with.
Yeah.
And you also have a duet on there also.
Yes, I have a duet with Damon Kirsch. And that was, you know... And actually, we talk about this in the live show, but I wanted to put those two songs together. And I think just because, you know, the overlapping smile and, you know, kind of the images that both of them conjured up. And Todd didn't really think they went together.
Mm-hmm.
And I really pushed him. I said, can't we find a way to do it? And so he said, well, what about doing it as a duet? And then I thought, oh, that's genius, because I would love to mix it up on the album and have like a male singer. And so that's how those two came about. And there's actually a New York cabaret singer, Tim Connell, who's going to sing it with me in New York. And we're adding a song to the show in New York just because the one in LA was a little on the short side. And a lot of people said, oh, I wanted more. I wanted more. So we're adding Who Can I Turn To?
Oh, good.
Which is like another one of the big, big, well-known Breakfast and Newly songs. So Tim Connell's going to sing that as well. Mm-hmm. And then he'll do the duet. And then the last mashup was, you know, probably one of my all-time favorite songs is Once in a Lifetime. And that's another one that makes me cry, from Stop the World.
Yeah. And I was really surprised at this mashup, and it works really, really well.
Yeah. Well, it was, again, like the overlapping moments,
right?
The image of the moments, you know, in both songs. And this is the moment not usually sung by a female singer, but we, you know, start with a bridge for that song and then end with a lot of that song and then a sort of a original ending. But yeah, it does seem to go. Oh, I got a lot of comments on that at the live show about how much people love that particular mashup.
Yeah, it works really well. Cause I mean, this is the moment has become sort of, I mean, for the longest time, it became such a song that we just kept hearing it over and over and over
again. Well, yeah, it was kind of an anthem and a lot of male singers would sing it.
And it was like, I kept hearing it. It was kept getting recorded by male singers. Getting used in like ice skating competitions. And it was like always being used. And I was like, God, I'm getting tired of this song, please. You know, that's what Jekyll and Hyde songs were, kind of anthemic.
Yeah, they were.
But to hear
there's
one,
just enough of it in this particular.
But it's good because it's one, it's a female voice, which is different. And then you're pairing it with Once in a Lifetime, which actually really works really well because it really sets it up really nicely. Let's talk about the New York thing because you're in on December 6th, you will be at Don't Tell Mom, which is one of the more famous cabaret spaces in New York.
Right.
And it's great space. So tell people what they can do to see you.
You can go to the website, www.donttellmamanyc.com. Mm-hmm. And you can reserve seats. You don't have to pay in advance. You reserve seats, but it is cash only. So it's a $20 cash cover charge, $20 two drink minimum. They do have food also, but you have to cover the minimum with two drinks for $20. Mm-hmm. The doors open at 6:15 and the show starts at 7. It's across the street, not quite directly from Joe Allen, a very famous restaurant in the theater district on 46th Street.
Absolutely.
Between 8th and 9th. And then we have Steve Doyle on bass. And then my Todd is coming in and my sister's traveling in. And then we have Tim Connell as the guest vocalist, and it's directed by Laura Henry. And
are you excited?
Oh yeah.
I would think so. I mean, because don't tell mamas, you know, it's a very well-known space.
Yeah.
In New York.
It's very well-known. And Todd and I are going to sing a number, at Jim Caruso's cast party on Monday the 4th.
Oh, that's
and then
fun.
The other thing I'm doing actually next Tuesday is Susie Mosier's lineup, which is that the Birdland Theater. Tuesday the 28th, I'm doing a different song from the show.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're getting out there.
So doing a little extra promotion.
The publicity machine is cranking up. You're getting ready for your December 1st album release, right?
Right.
You got to get things cranking.
If you're feeling fancy free, come wander through the world with me. And any place we chance to be will be our rendezvous. Two for the road, we'll travel down the years, collecting precious memories, selecting souvenirs, and living life the way we please. In summertime, the sun will shine. In winter, we'll drink summer wine. And And every day that you are mine will be a lovely day. As long as love still wears a smile, I know that we'll be two for the road. And that's a
Now that this is coming out, I know it's really early because the album is not quite out there yet, but it will be. What are your plans? I mean, you want to get out there and start doing the Leslie Bricka show to help support it. But how are you doing? Because you're still working, you said, right?
Right.
So how does that going to work?
At the start of the pandemic, as you know, many jobs became remote. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, like, I'm going to be working next week. I mean, today's a holiday, but I'll be working next week remotely. Mm-hmm. And it's not that hard to do. You know, my company actually has a New York office also, though I'm not going to go to the office, but I have found a rhythm and a way to do both. And I always look at it and say, you know, everyone has kind of an extracurricular thing, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, a side hustle, whatever. You've got to do it for your health. Mm-hmm. And this is mine.
Yeah, there you go. So we all do it.
So I will make it work, and we'll see if the label, the record label, seems to think I can get dates all over the country, and maybe that will happen, and maybe I'll, mm-hmm, do some shows, mm-hmm, you know, other places. Because I would like to continue to do it. I think it's a really good show. And I think, as I said, I knew it would be received as a Leslie Bricka's tribute, but I didn't realize to what extent. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that actually his son, I first found him on Instagram and I started following him, Adam Brickus. Mm-hmm. And then he followed me. And so we've sort of communicated. And he listened to a couple of the songs and he said, oh my God, this is great. And Leslie would have been delighted. And, you know, so I kind of have a little bit of a supporter there. And I just feel like people need to know who wrote these songs, mm-hmm, that you love for so long, you know?
But it's two things. It's getting that out there, but it's also for you.
Yeah.
Because
of course.
It's also for your own mental and emotional health.
It is
100%. You're doing something you love, and you get the response from the audience, and you get to do something that's really fulfilling and satisfying.
Yeah. No, it's exhilarating. And I remember also when we were doing all the classic Broadway shows, mm-hmm, where I looked at it, you know, it actually was kind of a fluke the way it started. I had been hired, a friend of mine through a friend, whatever. They said, would you put together a show for this country club? And so I had like five singers and we were going to do this show. And I thought, well, maybe we'll do a dry run at Vitello's, because they had been saying, come do a show. And I just called it an evening of classic Broadway. I couldn't think of anything else. But then we started doing them regularly and grew Vitello's, moved to Rockwell. And at first I thought, oh, this is just a vanity thing so that I can sing. You know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I realized when audience members would come up to us at the end and say, I haven't heard that song in so many years. Oh, my God, it's so great. And even though it was called classic Broadway, it was newer stuff, older stuff, well-known stuff, not well-known stuff. Mm-hmm. But by and large, people would, like, I remember a guy who, a singer, sang Stars in the Moon. And he said, oh, my God, that's one of the greatest songs I've ever heard that I didn't know. And just the responses, I realized what we were doing for other, mm-hmm, people, mm-hmm, that no one was doing a show like ours. Mm-hmm. And then I suddenly realized, well, this isn't just for me.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Right. But that kind of feedback is the kind of stuff that does it. It's good for you.
Oh my goodness. That's why
the thing. That's what you do it for.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, every time we would do a show, just like my show at Catalina, I'm sure I'll feel the same way at Don't Tell Mama. I get a huge adrenaline rush, like during the sound check that it lasts for days. You know, it's just, it's so satisfying and it's exhilarating. And that's why I say it's extreme sports, because I can only imagine. I am not a skier. But I can imagine that you're at the top of the mountain, ready to go down that slope, and it's the same.
Yep.
Exhilarating it is. Feeling.
That when the standing at the top of the slope is no different than standing backstage, waiting for that announcer to say, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage."
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's the same thing. You're waiting for that.
Whoosh,
right there, you go. Right, you're out of that starting gate. So, what's the second album going to be?
Well, I can tell you right now because
that was kind of a joke, but okay.
Because I had not thought about it until after the Catalina night.
Oh, okay.
And it will be a Stephen Schwartz album.
Because I was going to say, you said earlier Baker's he was your wife, favorite.
I'm very friendly with him still. And I worked with him a little over 10 years ago on a commercial production of Working, a reworking of Working that we did in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And in fact, before I did the part-time diva show, I had always wanted to do a cabaret show. And I remember I was in New York for meetings about Working. I went to a cabaret show at the Metropolitan Room, and it was two singers with glorious voices. And by the third song, I was bored because they weren't, you know, telling us why they were singing the songs.
Right, exactly.
They weren't telling stories. It was nice singing, but it was like I could listen to an album for that. And so I remember on the trip home, on the flight, I made a list of 37 Stephen Schwartz songs that I was going to choose from for a cabaret show. And then actually the finished product, I think I only had The Wizard and I may have been the only, and For Good. I had The Wizard I and For Good in the cabaret show. But I, you know, there are a lot of songs of his that he recorded a couple of albums on his own that people don't really know. And I won't do as many obvious choices. I'll try to, you know, come up with some different ones. But I thought, you know, another composer centric album would be nice.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, I wasn't sure if it was too early to ask that question because some people right after their first album, it kind of gets in their blood and
I feel. Yeah.
You know, that once they do the first one, they're like, "Now I know how to do this and I had a good experience," or sometimes I had a bad experience, but I learned from the mistakes. So I'm ready to do a second one and do it right this time.
Yeah.
And they already have formulated in their head ideas of what they would do for songs they would do. So it's good that you've already got ideas, you know, you've got that kind of goal out there for the next one, which is great. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Congrats. Well, Diane, I'm so glad you took the time today to come on the show and chat.
Thank you for inviting me. Really appreciate it.
Congratulations on the album. Remind people, it is called You and I, The Words and Music of Leslie Bricus, a songwriter that I wish people knew who he was. You know his songs. Trust me, you know his songs. But I encourage you to pick it up. We will guide you people to the Don't Tell Mama website so they can get tickets to see you on December 6th in New York. Also to your website, because you have your own website where people can find you and they can see what you're doing. They also can find the album. As of December 1st, they'll be able to find the album and pick it up. And you said CD Baby is where people can get
CD Baby, but it'll be on Apple Music, Amazon, iTunes. It'll be everywhere.
As of December 1st, people will be able to find it. Right. And it's a wonderful album. I'm holding it up. People can't see it because we're on radio, but I'm holding it up in front of the camera because I got my physical copy in the mail. Anyway, congratulations, Diane. I'm so thrilled for you.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you so much.
You and I will travel far together. We'll pursue our little star together. We'll be happy as we are together. We may never get to heaven, but but it's heaven at least to try. You and I are going on together till the time we have is gone together. Watch the evening drawing on together, growing older, growing closer, making memories that light the sky. Time we have is gone together. Watch the evening drawing on together, growing older, growing closer.